Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, good evening to everyone. Welcome to another session of Booker T. Washington Speaks on this Saturday, July 28, 2018. And we have a very important discussion today on a topic which I won't mention now, but it's dealing with the education at the HBCUs. But again, welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks on this Saturday, July 28th. As we join in discussion from our virtual African American Family Room Forum. I am Halim the Dream Builder, known as also Dr. Halim Mustafa, your co-host and supporter of the professor, who is the senior great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington. And his name is Marshall Washington Cavendish Musa Abui, and all those names have actually an extension to his family bloodline. And the professor, as I just call him in a summation, is the senior great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington, who is the historical legend who founded Tuskegee Normal Institute, now known worldwide as Tuskegee University. So keeping in tradition of what this show has been doing, and what certainly his senior great-grandson, great-grandfather, Dr. Booker T. Washington, we're going to open in prayer. And I'm going to say it in Arabic and English. And please join me with me, if you will, or in silence, or in your thought processes. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Maliki Yawmiddin. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا صراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. The Arabic which I just recited, I will say, translate to you in English what it says. Beginning, we or I seek refuge with God away from the accursed devil Satan. With the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to God, cherisher and sustainer of the worlds, most gracious, most merciful, master of the day of judgment. Thee alone do we worship, and thy aid do we seek. Show us a straight way, the way on those whom thou hast bestowed thy grace, those whose portion is not wrath, and who go not astray in their worship and duty and service to you. Amen. Let it be so. Again, I am Dr. Haleem Mustafa, also known as Haleem the Dream Builder, and as I mentioned, your co-host supporting the professor. And the nice topic, before I introduce the professor informally, is to say the topic for tonight is tied to the topic of do HBCUs, which is historic black colleges and universities, still have an important and necessary purpose? And what is their purpose now in the 21st century? Again, I repeat that. Do HBCUs, which is historic black colleges and universities, still have an important and necessary purpose? And what is their purpose now in the 21st century? And without further ado, I'd like to say, Professor, the show is all yours, sir.
Okay, well, good evening. Good evening, Brother Dr. Haleem Mustafa. Thank you for that wonderful opening. Can you hear me okay?
100% loud. Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm kind of doing a double duty tonight. I'm actually engineering the New Africa Excellence Mirage Speaks, New African Excellence Enterprise Mirage Speaks show, while I'm simultaneously engineering this show. And so I just want to make sure that I have everything hooked up, as we might say, so we can be on the air. So thank you very much. Okay, yes, the topic tonight, as you just mentioned, and I'm just going to reiterate it, is do HBCUs still have an important and necessary purpose? And what is their purpose in the 21st century? I just want to share some information that I just recently became familiar with concerning the HBCU graduation issue. And this particular article gives some light on the situation. This is actually published by the United Negro College Fund Public Policy and Government Affairs Office. You know, the United Negro College Fund was actually founded back when I was just a child growing up, back in, I think it was the late 40s or the early 50s, to help black colleges mainly financially to raise money to sustain the black colleges. And Dr. Frederick Douglass Patterson, who was the third president of Tuskegee after retiring from the presidency of Tuskegee after serving nearly 30 years as the president of Tuskegee, I think it's around 25 years, he retired, turned it over to Dr. Luther Hilton Foster, who served nearly 30 years, I think it was 28 years. But Dr. Patterson became the head of the United Negro College Fund and did a wonderful job in creating interest in different parts of the society and helping to fund the black colleges. Now, most of the black colleges, even with the help of the United Negro College Fund, are struggling to stay open and struggling to survive. But here's a report that I want to share with our audience concerning the graduation rates. The report says that two-thirds of the jobs of the future will require college-educated individuals. Two-thirds of the jobs of the future will require college-educated individuals. Yet African Americans lag behind in college attainment. More must be done to ensure our increasingly diverse workforce or to ensure that our increasingly diverse workforce has the skills needed to compete in the global marketplace. Now, I'm going to take a slight diversion here just to say this to our audience. A key word or key term in this report that we need to keep in mind as we go into our discussion is global marketplace. Compete. Skills needed to compete in the global marketplace. I'll continue. For over 150 years, historically black colleges and universities, also known as HBCUs, have successfully educated students of color. Control comparisons prove that HBCUs outperform non-HBCU institutions in retaining and graduating black students after accounting for the socioeconomic status and academic preparation of enrolled students. In 2013, the six-year graduation rate for HBCUs was 32%, compared to 52% for other four-year private nonprofit colleges and universities. This indicator, however, does not reflect student factors such as their socioeconomic status and academic preparation or levels of institutional wealth. If HBCUs and non-HBCUs were to enroll students with the same characteristics, HBCUs would graduate black students at a rate that is 14 percentage points higher than non-HBCUs. HBCUs disproportionately enroll, and this is another key factor we have to keep in mind as we go forward with the discussion, HBCUs disproportionately enroll economically and educationally disadvantaged students. Two factors that account for two-thirds of the variance in graduation rates between HBCUs and non-HBCUs. The more a college serves and enrolls Pell recipients, which that's just a code word for the black students, the lower its graduation rates. The more a college serves and enrolls Pell recipients, i.e. black students, the lower its graduation rates. Institutions with 20 percent or fewer Pell recipients, again, translate to black students, average graduation rates of 80%, while institutions with 80% or more, I'm just going to say black students because that's what they're talking about here, institutions with 80% or more black students, average graduation rates, listen to this, of 25%. At HBCU, 71% of students receive Pell grants, which really another factor is that some of the students don't receive these Pell grants because their parents are able to get them in school and the parents are not poor enough to qualify for the Pell grants. But really what they're saying is that most HBCUs enroll mostly black students. And that's obvious. That's why they call HBCU still. Graduation rates are also correlated with admission selectivity. The less selective an institution is, the lower its graduation rates. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious, but if you admit somebody to your college with a D-plus average in high school, what can you expect? If you're not just giving away easy A's, if the students have to do college-level work and they come in with a D-plus average in high school, what can you expect? But it says consistent with their mission, and that's what we're going to talk about. We didn't use the word mission in the opening question. We used the word purpose, but it's really talking about the same thing. It says consistent with their missions, HBCUs tend to be less selective in their admissions criteria. We're going to come back to that because we need to talk about that. More than 80% of students at HBCUs are African Americans. Now, actually, over 90% of the students at HBCUs are what we would call black students, but they're making a distinction of African Americans because a lot of the students at HBCUs are black students, but they're not African Americans, they're actually Africans. Like I attended school at Alabama State University in Huntsville, actually it's in Normal, Alabama, which is like part of the Huntsville metropolitan area. And they had they must have had at least 1,000 students from Africa on that campus, which only had about 4,000 students. So a lot of the students that are on the HBCUs, they are black students. But see, those people are graduating. The African students are graduating. It's the African American students that are having a problem staying in school and graduating. It says in 2014, only 5% of black high school students or high school graduates were college ready. Critical subjects of English, reading, mathematics, and science. Think about that. Just 6 years ago, and I think this report was released last year, but in 2014, only 5 out of 100 black students that graduated from high school were academically prepared for college. That's basically what it's saying. Think about that. Only 5%, 5 out of 100, 1 out of 20 of the high school graduates that were black were ready academically to go to college. But a lot of them were going because a lot of these colleges were letting them come knowing they were not academically prepared for college. Then it goes on to say that HBCUs have lower levels of institutional wealth. And we won't get into that aspect. What my focus is tonight is the academic preparation. So we'll stop right there. So you've heard a lot, Dr. Haleem Mustafa, in just a few minutes. What's your take on that? What's your response to what I just read?
Well, it's very bleak for sure. but we have to keep in mind also is that there's some other factors at the earlier grade levels that certainly we have onus, black people have onus in doing something to bridge those learning behaviors or standards. See, we can't continue to blame what is the end game, that we're not making all these growth at the right level. But, you know, everybody matures at different age ranges. And we have to have, you know, my opinion is not only the teachers, but the community engaged at levels that would be setting standards of what we expect from you. Because the young people, they're only going to achieve to the level which we encourage them and expect them to achieve. If we keep just allowing our young people to go through and get to the college to develop their maturity, it's going to be issues like this. Now, I know that there's young people who mature at different levels, right? And college in general, across the board, no matter what the family's economic status is preparing young people to become mature thinking adults. And I'm talking about people who come from really rich families who are really themselves very privileged in terms of having that, you know, the cultural dominance in this society. So we can't, you know, just overlook the fact that maturity levels vary. And we have to, again, I'm going to say this, we have a very short memory as a people, right? We have to look at what are we going to do for ourselves in the ideas of taking responsibility and ownership of these assets or these young minds, because they're our future. If we don't take it seriously, we're going to continue to be imbued with this kind of what I feel very depressed in terms of those statistics and not really upholding what is, I know, the quality of the intelligence in the communities. Because the idea is that, you know, athletes certainly have a lot of intelligence, even though they're just not really academically focused in a lot of ways. But again, until we have people that are modeling it and we are ourselves raising the monies to support our needs. And I'm going to say this in what I really know, what I really, really know. And I've just found this out, you know, as I grew up older, right? Historically, we used to have a spirit of helping ourselves way back in history, including the time period when your great-grandfather was doing his thing in terms of building that university out and the commitment of what the people who came to that university and helped, such as Dr. Carver, but not limited. There's other folks who have come and helped. And the spirit of learning was much more profound, and we really understood that education was critical. So now we've been dumbed down, and we got to keep in mind this is a subtle thing of called a subtleties of a subtle attack on the psychic of our community in destroying our young people's functionality. Now I'm going to just give you a simple example, and I won't go into a whole lot of detail now, but okay, listen, there's a stories in I forget the exact, my wife was sharing with me, the police officer had a traffic stop on this black youth, and they had him handcuffed, and by two officers holding him, he stands up talking, and another officer who actually had the aggressive attitude tased him with a taser, and the young man passed out, right? Now, the police officers, they eventually told on their cop who did it, that was definitely wrong. So there is, unfortunately, there's people who really want to see the bad side of us as a cultural group to justify them as themselves who are doing these cruel things to us. And so until we address it from a multiplexing solution base, we're going to be always, you know, kind of wondering where we're going. So my idea and what I believe that we have to do something like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because no one's being intellectually honest about his contributions, because I'm hearing a lot of people talking about the racism system and the ideas of separation, but they're not giving the kind of credit that I know that I found out about later in life, because I really wasn't in that era. But this man had some profound things that he was doing to bring about the solutions. And I'm going to say this in one summation. So black family freedom is do for self justice. The justice that we want, we have to understand as a people, it's about family freedom, and that family freedom is only coming when we learn to do for self in the ideas of education, in the ideas of equality, in the ideas of economic independence. And I'm going to stop my comments for now because I can flow on the subject, sir. This is a really serious subject, and that's this for now, sir.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and I appreciate that. Now, what I would like to ask you to do is repeat the topic which you introduced earlier. Repeat it, please.
Yes, sir. Yes, the topic for today's show is do HBCUs, historic black colleges and universities, still have an important and necessary purpose? And what is their purpose in the 21st century? And my last comment, affirmative, the purpose is always there. It is never going to change. We haven't finished the job. That's it, sir.
Okay, but what is their purpose? If we're going to ask the question, should HBCU still have a purpose? The next part of the question is, what is their purpose in the 21st century?
The idea in the 21st century, everything is tied to always the future development. What are we going to bring in terms of the learnings, or that we bring things solution-wise, business-wise, education simulation, visionary thinking to get young people to connect up with the various learning modalities that they have, all right, to the idea of addressing how do we get certain things out of the diagnosis, such as these psychotropic drugs that they're making these young people take to cause them to further dysfunction. So it's a very complicated situation, but I know it's not just at the college level that we have to address it, but it's important that at the college level we have to accelerate their learning and teach them on the mature ways of modeling what is the standard, sir. So the teachers have to model that standard, the campus has to model that standard, and we can't accept anything less then success from them. That's what we have to do. But right now we're talking failure to them because they're coming from certain poverty environments. See, if you keep telling people that because you come from this poverty environment, you're going to be nothing, then they're going to believe that. So we have to imbue it with the hope, with faith, with inspiration. But more importantly, we have to do it from certain things that talk about, like Dr. Benjamin E. Mays, right? Now, this is one of my favorite quotes. It must be borne in mind that the tragedy of life does not lie in not reaching your goals. The tragedy of life lies in having no goals to reach for. Failure, but low aim is sin. That's the best I can say, sir.
Okay, but I'm going to have to ask you to try hard to answer the question. But I'm going to say this first. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but let's say that I am a parent of a 17-year-old, soon-to-be 18-year-old daughter, okay?
Yes.
Who I'm looking, you know, that myself and my wife are looking for the appropriate college to help her to be able to compete. Remember we said earlier, we're going to come back to that, to compete in the global marketplace, all right?
Yes, yes.
That's what we want our daughter. We want her to be able to have the best of the best when it comes to job opportunities and living conditions and everything. We want her to be able to step up on the ladder, not at the bottom rung, but at least, you know, a few steps up than somebody didn't spend 4 years or 6 years or whatever in college. So we're looking for the college that's going to help her. So let's say that you are the recruiter. You're the recruiter for a black college. I'm just not going to mention the name of any particular college. I'm just going to say a black college. And I ask you that question. What is the purpose of your college in the 21st century? Now, I don't want to lecture because I'm making a bunch of phone calls this weekend, or probably, well, maybe they won't be available on the weekend, but this week I plan to call at least 50 different HBCUs, okay? And then I'm going to call 59 HBCUs to try to get down to a short list of about 20 colleges, and then let her choose down to the last five, and then we're going to do campus visits. But before we do all that, I want to be able to write down on my notepad what the admissions recruiter, i.e. yourself, tells me in maybe about a three-sentence answer, what is the purpose of your college? What would you say in the 21st
I would say, purpose is develop a leadership. The purpose is provide a safe environment where that learning is encouraged. The purpose is to have young people who are attendees, who are not themselves time wasters, who are not there just to party, because, you know, so those would be the points that I would look at, is that what is this, the environment, and look at, just look at private institutions. I think more so,
okay,
not necessarily, look at private institutions.
Brother Haleem,
go ahead.
I'm not being rude, but I just wanted a three sentence answer, then we could go into the next part.
Okay, all right. I would say you want to provide a safe environment that gives the best exposure to a diverse curriculum and business and industrial career pathways that would lead to 21st century success. I would say that in summation.
Okay, so I hope our audience that's listening has a clear picture now of what at least some of the thinking is concerning the purpose of the HBCUs in the 21st century. In relationship to preparing the students for competing in the global marketplace. Now, let me ask you this question, not trying to trick you or put you on the spot or anything like that, but let's say that you were the University of California, Berkeley, all right, since you're familiar with that area and you've been on that campus several times, a number of times. So let's say now that you were the recruiter for Berkeley, okay, not just looking for black students to recruit, but just in general. And the parent, me, for example, called and asked you that exact same question. What is the purpose of the University of California, Berkeley, in the 21st century? What would your answer be for that?
It would be exposing the competitive environment of what is the learning purpose for, again, leadership and the ideas of new industries that need to be birthed, the ideas of bringing back social responsibility to the community for the next generation. You know, being a well-rounded, balanced young person who
okay,
does not focus on just.
That's your three-sentence answer. I just want a three-sentence. Remember, I got 100 phone calls to make. So
okay,
I just want
you got it.
All right. So that's fine. Okay, now let's see if we have any other callers that might be wanting to give us some input. Okay, let's just go ahead and see. Ms. Pianca is online, and I want to get him here. If you'll bear with me, Ms. Pianca, I'm using a different analogy tonight. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get set up using the way that I am set up. So I have to take a second here to see, can I bring you on? But just be patient with me. We'll get it together. We will have it together in just a second. Just a second. Bear with me. Bear with me just a second. This is a little technical thing I'm trying to work out. Trying to work it out. But in the meantime, while I'm getting this together, I want you to go ahead and repeat, Dr. Haleem Mustafa, I want you to go ahead and repeat our topic. I'm sure Ms. Pianca probably heard it, but just to make sure.
Yes,
he's
sir.
The
topic is, do HBCUs, which is Historic Black Colleges and Universities, still have an important and necessary purpose, and what is their purpose in the 21st century?
So welcome to you, Mr. Pianca. We're so happy to see you again this weekend. We're always excited to hear your views when you have our family room forum. So what do you think about the topic that you just told us about?
Well, HCBUs came about for a particular purpose. And today, compared to the time that Cheney came along, with Cheney is about ready to close, along with Concordia in Alabama and Denmark and South Carolina. Those conditions don't exist today like they did then. And if they did, people would be flocking to them. How many of them is the left now? I think it's the next 7 years, it's going to be down to, what, 25 schools? That's what the schools say themselves. It's not what Fox News is saying or Donald Trump or Betsy DeVos. That's what the schools say themselves. So, and, you know, black kids, black students are going to school where they want to fit in. And Mr. Mustafa made some reference to the very argument that I have why there needs to be school choice with vouchers in the elementary years, because you're absolutely right. In a classroom, you have students there not because of their own, but because of the portion of society that they come from, that portion of society at their home or neighborhood or whatever is just not functional. And where you do have students that are coming from functional homes, and their parents' household want to see their child go in another direction, they should be allowed to go in that other direction. I don't know why I come. I understand. I know why, but it's foolish to try to keep somebody in a environment that's not befitting of them. We oftentimes talk about how everyone else was allowed to start the race and blacks was held back. Well, they was held back to everyone else was at the 50-yard line or whatever distance you want to associate with this analogy. But you're doing the same thing with these other students who don't belong in these classrooms because they were more competent, were more prepared because their families prepared them, and they shouldn't be locked into that environment. They should be allowed to go on and pursue and achieve what it is that they're able to achieve. If these colleges are going to survive, they need to have colleges that's based on specifics. And it doesn't have to be one, but it has to be able to do them well. They need to be indulged in research and development and in the areas where people want to develop themselves. Some of these, and it could be liberal arts too, Mr. Washington. You know, some people may want to be communication majors. That's perfectly fine. But the thing is that the people that graduate from these schools and become the alumni, then I think they would have some sort of sense of responsibility to support those schools on a level where they can create endowments to do just like any other school can do. So that's my opinion. You know, one thing that kind of detests me, but I understand again why they do it. They have these tours where they take graduating students, proposed graduating students, and take them on these tours of these HC historical black colleges and universities. Well, for parents that want to do that, it's perfectly fine, but some parents don't want to do that. And once again, that child shouldn't be made to participate in that. Well, that's my opinion. And, you know, you listen to me talk, my emphasis is always putting emphasis on those that's working and doing the right thing, especially as far as the home is concerned and the family. That family should be providing the support for their child. And you know another thing too, I hear people say this, I'm not attacking you, Brother Mustafa, but African, quote unquote, is no different than any other ethnic group of human being on the planet. You have notorious things that come out of those societies. You have good things that come out of those societies. You have rape, murder, pillage, the killing of babies, sacrifice, cutting people's heads off, and all those things. And you also have benevolence that's come out of those societies. Those are human beings, those human being traits. The thing is that people have been only concentrated on one side of the coin, like we often see, and never looked at the other side. But that's all I got to say right now, Mr. Washington. I'd be interested to get your opinion.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Well, I will accommodate your desire, your interest, and I will give you my opinion. I attended two HBCUs, had a wonderful time. The social life was great. The black fraternity life was stupendous. I pledged an Omega Psi Phi fraternity at an HBCU. That was a wonderful, painful, but wonderful experience. I don't mind admitting that part. But academically, I did well because I was prepared. I was very well prepared. I went to a very good, I actually went to three high schools, and each one of them gave me a good skill set to prepare me to score in the. Not bragging. My wife, you know, sometimes she doesn't like me to tell things like this, but I'm just saying that I was fortunate. I won't go ahead and say what my SAT percentile score was because I don't want to be accused of bragging. But it was high enough to get me admitted to Yale and Princeton universities, and I didn't even apply to Harvard. Because my parents took an interest in preparing me all through from nursery school, the way I started reading at the age of 4 years old, all the way through kindergarten, all the way through elementary school, high school, and so forth. And I know a lot of black children don't have that particular advantage, and I know a lot of Hispanic children don't have that particular advantage. And maybe there's a lot of white children that don't have that particular advantage. But I'll tell you this. I teach college history. I have 60 students, and they're divided into two groups. One of the groups is on a very selective campus here in Augusta, Georgia, Augusta University, which is actually a medical research university. And the undergraduate program is a feeder into the medical, dental school, and health sciences programs, but they also have a very strong business, internationally recognized business college. And it's very selective. It didn't used to always be that way, but it's very selective. Now, the other program that I teach in, I have students from several HBCUs here in Georgia. And I have students that are from predominantly white campuses. But when I look at the papers, because my courses are intensive, with historical writing essays that average anywhere from not long essays, 4 to 8 pages, 4 to 7 pages, I'll say. But it's easy for me to see, and I hate to say this, it's easy for me to see the students that come from this campus, Research University campus, is ultra selective, very easy to see. Now, in the HBCU group, I have some outstanding, well-prepared students to write extremely well. But a good percentage of them have issues, have writing issues, have what I would call attention deficit issues, because they don't seem to be that interested in college work. They like the sports, they like the social life, but the college life, as far as academics is concerned, is not really where they are. And I'm sure there are a lot of white kids the same way, but I'm just saying that when you have a school, that the character of that school is such that it's called a party school, but it's not a party school that has a graduation rate of over 80%. There are black people going to white party schools where the graduation rate is 80%. But most of these black party schools, the graduation rate is under 40%. There's a problem there because, as you said, Dr. Mustafa, that we should be training our students at the HBCUs for leadership roles. But how am I going to, if I'm a college student and I'm going to be flunked out of college because I won't do my homework because I'm out partying and I'm not paying attention in class, how am I going to be a leader to that high school student that's looking for a big brother to mentor him when my habits are wrong? That's the question I'm asking.
I hear you loud and clear, and that's why, again, modeling of what is the standard of a human being that's functional has to be in the community. I mean, from top to bottom. I'm talking about everyone who is in those environments have to take some onus of the big problem that's causing us to be seen as the failures of society, right? I'm talking, I'm not trying to be specific and pointing at ministers or the churches or even some of the masjids and other religious institutes, but a lot of them who profess of this certain standard are not living up to it, which makes, again, the attitude in the community is that no one really cares. So as long as no one really cares, well, why should I care? That becomes a natural response. And so we have to kind of figure a way to balance out the community in what is, historically some of the icons who came through to bring about certain change, right, in the ideas. You look at the Dr. Carl G. Woodson as an example. I mean, we keep forgetting about the historical footprints. And that's what's important, because without the historical footprints, there's no path to follow to know where we've come from and to know education where we're supposed to be going. That's my comments.
Well, to respond to that, Don, I will say something.
Yeah, funny thing you mentioned, but I was doing some tallying, and there's over 17 million Black Southern Baptists. You have about 7.5 million as falling under Charles Blake, Church of God in Christ. In Memphis alone, you have 50,000 Church of God in Christ members. That's Black. Another 3 to 5 million Black Catholics. And heck, that just about include everybody. I mess around and throw myself in that number. But when those people don't want to do no more than what they're doing. And I would imagine that some of these problems are affecting them. But when you have 17 million Church of God, 17 million Southern Baptists that believe in heaven and hell, as they profess when they're surveyed in the 90 percentile. Well, I hear people say that folks don't come together, and maybe talking about Blacks. Well, then these numbers dispel that. Now, getting back to those colleges like Tuskegee has a central focus. I think that that college has done very well, and it could do a lot better. Morehouse, understand. School of Medicine, done very well and probably could do better. Then you had another school that's involved in agriculture. Which one is that? Alcorn University, Mr. Washington?
Yes, Alcorn is basically an agricultural school.
Mm-hmm. I conversed with the people there and had some very good response. Only thing is that if I don't see where the general topic of the school is being played out, actual doers and mechanics in that industry. I don't know. Maybe you know more about it than I do. But I'm just saying, another thing I was making reference is that here in St. Louis, there in St. Louis at the NAACP office there on Delmar in Euclid, there's an operation called Launch Code. Launch Code that's going on there. And this course, for the duration, can cost someone, if they seek it elsewhere, anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000. And this location is right in the center of the hood. But when you go into the place and you can look at galleries of classes, you see very few blacks. You have, from my understanding, you have individuals that come from surrounding states, whites. You see people of other ethnic persuasions, Indians. But you see very few blacks. So maybe we not, the questions are not being asked, Mr. Washington, or maybe this concern is going nowhere. Maybe there is no concern there any longer. Maybe the focus should be placed elsewhere. Maybe the agitated wants and emphasis are only from a given few that's trying to encourage and entice and coerce others to get involved in areas that they don't want to get involved in. So, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, first of all, Brother Mustafa, did you want to say something before I do?
Well, yeah, I just want to say that, see, a lot of times in societies that are functioning, the balance is patriotic duty that people have a connection that this belongs to them. So, therefore, they feel empowered knowing that this belongs to them. I.e., this earth, this planet, this community, this company, this and that, et cetera. That empowering needs to be kind of activated in terms of how we get young people to see that, hey, this is yours too. Take claim of it. Step to the table, right? That's just the thought.
Okay, well, I'll give you my two cents. We're going to close a little bit early tonight. It's 9 o'clock, but a lot of people, because it's been beautiful weather and most of the South may be still out as it gets dark and just getting in. And so we don't have the numbers that we usually have, which is fine because it just takes three people really to have a real discussion that we've had.
You can drink lemonade on the porch in the dark in the South.
Yeah. Well, we used to do it all the time, but you know, in my neighborhood, the city used to go around with these trucks that would spray
mosquitoes, foggers, vector control, yes.
I've seen that around here where I live lately, so I'm not going out on the porch after dark because I have had a chance to experience these new mosquitoes, 2018 mosquitoes, they're not fun to be around, you know, so I'm just going to stay inside tonight. I appreciate that suggestion. And it is a good suggestion. In fact, maybe one of these days I might screen in my back patio and I might be able to go out there at night and talk. But I'm going to go ahead and stay in the house and just kind of close it out early tonight. But I want to say something about this. And I know that this could start a lot of additional talk if we had more discussion time or we had more people. But my feeling is this. And remember, I said I went to two HBCUs, and it was a great experience. I would not trade those years. I went for a total of 3 years, 2 years at Tuskegee and a year at Alabama A&M. Wonderful experience being around fellow African-Americans. I participated in the college life to the extent that I felt that I was very, very much a part of it. In fact, I was president of my class at Tuskegee. But now here's the thing. Tuskegee has a less than 50% graduation rate as of the last report. I think it was 44%.
You only have five schools, if you got that many, that has above 50% out of all the 100 and some odd schools. You got some schools with a graduation rate as low as, 10%? That's totally ridiculous.
Yeah, well, you know, Dr. Mustafa and I were talking just the other day, and I'm not trying to put your town in a bad light, but Texas Southern University, they have less than a 15% graduation rate down there in Texas Southern at Houston. In Houston, now what's going on? I mean, here's
you mean Southern? You mean Southern University? I'm in Baton Rouge.
No,
Baton
Southern
Rouge.
University. They're less than 10%, but Texas Southern in Houston, they're less than 15%.
So see, Southern University in Baton Rouge is less than 10%?
That's what I'm going to pull this thing up again. I was just looking at it. I had done a search trying to get some actual figures, and I'm looking at it. Let's see what we got here. It might have gone off the page because I think this printout went off the page at 18%, but they're not on the list of the 18% and above. I can tell you that much.
Well, my siblings go to LSU, and they're an engineering student and a business major, and they will graduate. They would be done with their engineering this fall of their last year, and probably another year to finish with their major in business. And this is his fourth year coming up. So, and he don't have any loans. So these things can be done, but I didn't know that school was that low in graduation rate, but you know, you said it is. I guess it is.
Well, I'm gonna correct myself. I just found Southern. Excuse me. I had to apologize. I have to correct myself. I just found they are 28%. 28%.
And that's really not good neither. But you know, this is what it is. That means that those parents is gonna have to pay. Those students have to pay 50% more if they go to school for 6 years than what they normally should have to, and is that they finish at all.
And these include a 6-year graduation rate. So even in 6 years, even in Southern, only 28%, less than a one out of three people is graduating in 6 years. But let me just say this, and I'm going to probably go through what I have to say. I believe that it should not be the responsibility of the universities, who are basically in this time we're living in, staging students to go to professional or graduate schools, because to get into the top jobs nowadays in business and education and in the technical areas, you pretty much have to have a graduate degree. So the 4-year schools really should be preparing the students to go to graduate schools. Now, if these students are going to go to reputable graduate schools, they're going to have to be well prepared. They're going to have to be well prepared, because getting in is competitive and staying in is competitive. And so these students that are coming out of these schools that are not prepared, even if they graduate, are going to have less opportunities. But the ones that go there that can't even keep up with the work in 6 years, they're going to have a problem, because they're not going to have a chance for the better job. So what's the answer? Okay, first of all, I know there's going to be some argument against this, and that's fine, but I believe the schools should not even be allowing these students to take up the seats. For an example, I'm getting to the chase now. Tuskegee's got a 45% graduation rate. Less than half of the students that go to Tuskegee are graduating for many reasons, but we won't go into that, in 6 years. Now, right down the street, less than 15 miles, 10 miles down the street, is Auburn University. It's got more applications than it can actually find seats for. So, and I was talking to Dr. Mustafa earlier today, Mr. Pianke, and I said, if Tuskegee were to do with Auburn the same as some of these other schools that are co-located are doing, which is allowing students to still be enrolled in the school of their choice, but to take classes over on the other campus. I know Harvard, and I'm not sure if it's Wellesley or another one of the Seven Sister schools. Students from both of these schools go to each other's classes. This has been the case at Spelman and Morehouse for many years. So if Tuskegee would open its doors and say that we want to have students from Auburn, who are going to probably be predominantly white students, come and and help fill the classrooms at Tuskegee. But anybody that's going to sit in the classroom at Tuskegee has got to be, quote-unquote, college-qualified, whatever that would mean, okay? In other words, we're not going to have this old program of just letting anybody, because they have a high school diploma, even if they have a D-plus average, come to college. I think that needs to stop right now. That's my position.
Well, I agree with you. And but see, then you're going to have to go back to take it back another step. And that's school choice. I mean, what else is you going to have to? What else are you going to do to save one college? Or have what else are you going to do to create an atmosphere on the thinking of saving these colleges? Because the students that go to these colleges are not prepared. That's why your professors, probably you too, have to work your butts off and do things twice as much as you would have to do if you went to a traditional university. But why come you don't have, why come it's not seen that these kids are not being prepared? Why is it that we have all these ceremonies? You have ceremonies when you come out of preschool, graduation. What do you call these things? What do you call these ceremonies? Prom, preschool prom, kindergarten prom, middle school prom, high school prom. And these children are not. This is just a false, pseudo, feel-good events that's going on. And people may not like to hear it, but it's true. I mean, tell me something different. It's not what we like to see. I know I've worked with students to help prepare them. I've sit down and talked to parents. I have a lecture that I do to parents on how to prepare your child for higher education. I like to start it off with as early as we possibly can, second grade if possible, because there's things that they need to work for and along the way. But once again, if you got this system that you presently have that's politically controlled, in public schools, where the majority of these students coming from, then there is no hope for no better outcome. And it's foolish to even think so. I mean, when you got ingredients on the table and your recipe calls for a particular outcome and you are short certain key ingredients, either in substance themselves or quantity, well, what you're trying to achieve in the recipe is not going to happen.
I think that's a wonderful metaphor. I like that. I'm going to use that myself. I appreciate that. Thank you for sharing that with us. We're going to close in just a second. Other stuff, were you finished, Mr. Pionk? I didn't want to cut you off.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm finished.
I just want to say that, again, the expectations is critical. And again, you have teachers who come to school and they have such dysfunctionalized themselves that they are not conveying the enthusiasm or the, you know, the optimism that really triggers a young person to perk up. So you have lethargic teachers with unhappy lives teaching young spirited children, and the only way to get them to, like, get control of them is to tell them shut up and sit down, be quiet, and not engage them and challenge their intellect. That's my opinion in terms of what's going on there, that you have sorry teachers trying to teach inspired young people.
Okay, well, that's a good wrap up. I'm not going to add any more. I think I said my piece and I made my points as clear as I could. So we'll give Mr. Pianchi the last word, as they say. Would you like to do a closing statement, Mr. Pianchi? Okay, silence indicates that there's no closing word from Mr. Pianchi, so we'll go ahead and we'll wrap up. We want to thank everyone that joined us tonight on the internet to listen to this show. This show will be archived, and you can go on Blog Talk Radio, Booker T. Washington Speaks, in about 30 minutes if you didn't get to hear the whole show, and you can hear the whole discussion. Please let your friends know about the opportunity for them to hear this show. I think it's very provocative, and I think it needs to be discussed even further at different levels. But we've done something tonight that I think needs to be done. At least we brought it out on the table. So thank everyone again, and now we're going to close with our traditional, I say traditional, closing song, Lift Every Voice and Sing. I guess there's still enough light where we could say my career tree.